afternoon or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of September 4th, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. You know, I always tell you that we've got a great episode, and, well, this week it happens to be true, because I've got two of my favorite guests on the show. We always have a great time when they're here. From Information Week, we have Senior Editor Jessica Davis joining us. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hey, Kurt. Thanks for having me on.
And from our sister publication, Dark Reading, we have Senior Editor Sarah Peters. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks for having me, Kurt. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting week because on the one hand, there doesn't seem to have been a lot of news. On the other hand, there's been some very, very big news. So I want to go around the table. Start with you, Sarah. What has struck you as being noteworthy in your part of the world this week?
There's always something in my neck of the woods. For me, the thing that I've been following is the mess between MedSec and Muddy Waters and St. Jude. The fact that St. Jude just decided to sue MedSec and Muddy Waters did not come as a vast surprise to me, considering that their stock has fallen and that there are certainly concerns that some of the reports were possibly slander. I don't want to make that assumption myself, but there's certainly that argument to be made. And that for me was the most interesting thing. There's also some of the reports by President Obama out of the G20 summit asking for the world to have a little bit of to be a little bit reasonable when it comes to cybercrime, and maybe we need to establish some norms as it pertains to our cybercrime tools, and maybe we shouldn't be using them. Maybe our governments shouldn't be using them on each other with quite so freely as we do. I would say that those are the two of the things that are most interesting to me. But I know that you will be really wanting to talk about the official Dell-EMC merger, won't you?
You know, I will want to mention that because wrapped up in the Dell-EMC merger is Dell's takeover of, well, one of the biggest names in the security industry. That's RSA. Some people know RSA primarily from the RSA conference that happens every year. But RSA is a big player in IT security. And, you know, all of a sudden, they're part of the Dell fold. Now, to me, one of the interesting things is that it's obvious that Dell doesn't have its eye on building this enormous security portfolio because they managed to divest themselves of SecureWorks and SonicWall before the EMC deal closed. But is this the sort of thing that in your mind, Sarah, people should be concerned about? Do you see this having any impact on RSA customers at all, or for that matter, on RSA?
Well, Amit Iran has specifically stressed that the company will continue to have full autonomy under Dell and also the ability to maintain its own partner programs and ecosystems. I mean, he's saying that customers should expect to see business as usual. And whether that's true or not, obviously, remains to be seen. Honestly, I'm skeptical. I think that if there were, I mean, if there were any really big changes, I think that we probably would have been seeing them over the past 10, 11 months since this, you know, this deal kind of first was announced. But the fact that Dell has been kind of making these moves that you mentioned out of security and has still gone through with this big move with RSA, I'm a little nervous about what's going to happen. I think that what I think it's probably going to mean is that RSA may continue to kind of have autonomy, but I don't think we can expect a whole lot of innovation going forward from them. I think that's where I'm at. And considering that RSA has been a leader in encryption technology for such a long time, and that encryption is an area in which we need so much leadership and we need so much innovation right now, that is not the company that I would like to feel like we're if there's anywhere that I would like to be limited on innovation and leadership, that would not be the company that I would want to see it from, if that makes sense.
You know, it makes complete sense, because we so often compare the security world to an arms race. And you know, right. As you say, having innovation and leadership on the side of the good guys is important. And we certainly would hate to see that go away. There's more in security I want to talk about in a few minutes, but before we do that, Jessica, I want to turn to you. Was there anything that struck you as being particularly newsworthy this week? Any major announcement? Anything that really got your journalistic blood flowing to cover?
Absolutely. And speaking of giant companies and giant deals, Hewlett Packard Enterprise, HPE, announced this week during its earnings call that it was planning to spin off its software business and merge that with a company called Micro Focus, a British company, in an $8.8 billion deal. And so this is not the first time we've seen HPE spin off a piece of itself. Probably the biggest deal was when it split off from the PC arm of the company, the PC and printing arm of the company last fall, a year ago now almost. But also more recently, the company announced a spin merge deal for its services business too. It's spinning off its services arm and merging that with CSC. So this is really a slimmed down infrastructure company that Hewlett Packard Enterprise is becoming. You may remember a few years back, a big piece of that software, the software assets that were part of the HPE spin deal this week, was the $11 billion acquisition of Autonomy, which is an important data company, an important data analytics company. A lot of people believe that HP overpaid for that particular company when it acquired it. Now it's spinning off that and much of the rest of its software portfolio in that $8.8 billion deal. So a loss there. But I think that this announcement this week and some of the comments made by CEO Meg Whitman during the earnings call really reveals what the company's priorities are going forward. Now, HPE has talked about these before, but they were never implemented in such a way so that the strategy was really this clear. And it's all about the hardware, the infrastructure, the networking, and offering elastic cloud services, really, private cloud services to customers. that's what the focus of the company is going to be going forward. And it's a much smaller company than even the one we envisioned when it split off from the PC and printers division last year.
Okay, so let me ask about this new smaller company. I know that you have been following HP and HPE for a long time. Do you think that this continuing refinement, this continuing narrowing of the focus is something that was planned from the beginning, or are we seeing the focus be the justification for selling off bits and pieces so that the cash can come in and be applied to the bottom line? Do you get a sense of whether this is driven by wanting to focus the business or wanting to pay the bills?
Interesting question. I think it's a vision that was first articulated by an unpopular CEO at HP, Apotheker, who was the architect of the autonomy deal a few years back. He first talked about selling off the PC and printer arm of the company. So it's not something that hadn't been contemplated before. If you listen to the financial analysts on the earnings call talk about the strategy, they have noted that the IT services business has really gotten stronger over the past few years after a difficult time, and questioned the timing of the sale of the IT services division. So to me, this strategy that HPE is going forward with now is really what they had in mind in terms of their vision of what they wanted the company to be. And it's interesting because it's sort of in contrast with some of what Dell has done. Speaking of the Dell EMC deal that was consummated this week, that company has gotten bigger. HP has decided that to be truly agile, it needed to get smaller and more focused on the infrastructure, on what it was working on. And that's exactly the approach it's taking. So we'll see whether one approach works better than another with how these two giants execute their strategies going forward, I think.
I think that's very interesting. And Sarah, I want to turn to you because, you know, we're wrapping some of the RSA conversation into the Dell acquisition. From over on the security side, how big a deal are the security services portions of the companies that are in play in a lot of these mergers and acquisitions? Is security service a big part of what people are talking about regarding these vendors, or is that part of the world still mostly a products-driven business?
I think mostly at this point, RSA is not really considered a services business. I think for the most part, they're really considered a product. We really think of them more in terms of, you know, you think of your multi-factor authentication that you might get from them, and that's kind of, you know, it's a product, and that's kind of where it starts and end. I think Dell, and I think SecureWorks in particular was more of a had been more of a service oriented offering, but you know, these companies kind of, both the companies and what security managers need change so rapidly that it's really hard for me to pinpoint the answer to an answer to your question, because what they're talking about and what they're asking for change so quickly. What I would say, what we're hearing right now from everybody, what they're asking for the most is some kind of product or service that pulls together all of these other product and services and makes sense of them in a way that it makes sense of them quickly enough for them to have some answers that are useful to them in any kind of reasonable time frame. So the thing that we're hearing about all the time, we hear about threat intelligence. I'm sure that you guys hear about it too in your work. And there's just a million different ways to get threat intelligence information. You get it from newsletters, you get it from your SIM products, you get it from, just about every security product out there is promising you some kind of threat intelligence information. And so the security manager sitting in the SOC sits there with 18 different ways to get information about vulnerabilities and attacks, and they don't know how to prioritize all of them. Sometimes this information does not really jive. It doesn't all agree with, what one piece of information doesn't necessarily agree with another. So there is a whole new group of products, a whole new generation of products that's coming out now that is all about integrating those different data flows and trying to help each organization prioritize what threat to deal with first for that organization. So that if one of us on this call happens to say, hey, there's this giant critical vulnerability that everybody has to worry about right now, a company will know, well, actually, maybe I don't have to worry about that critical vulnerability right now. Maybe there's actually this medium vulnerability that's much more critical to me today. And that critical vulnerability can actually wait until next week, that kind of thing. That's what we're hearing is of the utmost importance to them right now, because there were just so many vendors coming out with services and with products that were giving them threat information before. Now there's just this need for something to make sense out of all of that stuff.
You know, I think one of the key parts of what you just said was when you're talking about not that it's deciding whether there is an attack or whether there is a vulnerability, but how to prioritize all of the attacks and all of the vulnerabilities. We know that your boat has holes in it. Mm-hmm. And we know that water is flooding in. So what we want to do is have software that tells you which hole is the biggest. Is that an entirely wrong analogy?
No, I would say that that's a pretty accurate analogy. Or at least, whether there's, even if there's not, a hole, at least there's somebody trying to find a hole, or there's something that might become a hole. I think that that's the most generous way of putting it.
I'm having this wonderful image of the movies where our action stars are in a submarine on the bottom of the ocean, and all of a sudden there's a tapping on the hull. We're a mile down. Who's out there knocking on our door? Sort of thing. Well, before we loop back into some of these, I want to mention another piece of news, and this is something that I watched as it happened live. That was the Apple announcement from Wednesday. The Apple Watch Series 2 comes out, and the big news there is that it's a little faster, a little brighter, and a lot more waterproof, as well as having a GPS inside. We've got the iPhone 7 with a number of additions and one critical deletion, and that's the headphone jack. And that leads me to what I think is the most important piece about the whole thing, and that's the way that the media, our journalistic brethren and sisters out there, have covered this whole thing. Because when I look around the web, if I did nothing but read the headlines and what we in journalism call the lead, basically the first paragraph of the story, I would be convinced that Apple was selling these phones with no headphone jack, no headphone, and no way for you to use any of your own headphones. And that's wrong, because while they did, in fact, take away the little mini phone jack, they are using Lightning, the Lightning port, as the connector for the headphones, and they do include a cabled set of headphones with the Lightning adapter in the package for the phone. They also include a Lightning to mini phone converter in the package. So while I'm sure they would love it if everyone ran out and bought these $170 wireless earbuds, they don't require it. But you don't get that sense at all from the coverage. And so what I would love to know from my two colleagues here on the panel, and Jessica, I'm going to start with you. How often do we get it wrong here in the tech industry? Do you frequently see, either us here at Information Week or our colleagues out at other sites completely missing what you know the story to be?
You know, I think that is the case. I think we are lucky here at Information Week that we have copy editors and editors who keep the people who write the stories honest and make sure that we all double-check our sources. So that's a helpful vetting process. But I got to tell you, Kurt, I did not realize what you just told me until you told me that. I was pretty convinced that, you had to buy additional hardware to make the new iPhone work. And I was pretty happy that I had an older one that I was not unhappy with, because I didn't want to spend the money on that new stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting for me. I will admit I own an iPhone 6 Plus, and I don't believe I'm going to upgrade to the iPhone 7. I just don't see, for me, the advantage to doing that. But it really bugged me because they made a point of saying, in the box, we're including these things that right up there on the stage. And yet, if it's in the coverage at all, it tends to be down around paragraph 9. And as those of us who write for a living know, by the time you get to paragraph 9, you're down to about 10% of your readers. You tend to peel off readers every paragraph you go into a story. And Sarah, I want to turn to you because it seems to me that the potential for this kind of mischaracterization is tremendous in the security world. Is this something that you see and that bothers you, or do most of the general press folks who write about IT security get it absolutely right?
All right, I have two things on this. Number one is, yes, there are things that are gotten wrong. And in security, at dark reading, we definitely spend, on certain stories, a not insignificant amount of our time trying to find out what actually happened when we see a number of things that don't seem to make sense from what was reported on the general media, because we know enough to know that doesn't exactly make sense. And we have to go back to our sources and say, okay, this doesn't quite add up. Can you tell us what actually happened? And it's getting harder because as cybersecurity gets more mainstream, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post will get first dibs on stories. So we are chasing after them as opposed to the other way around. And it makes it harder because now we have to report on what other people reported and double check what they said, as opposed to being able to get things first. And that does make life more difficult. However, I also think that there are the media has changed in a way that is not all the problem of journalists. And I'm not going to put all of this on the writers themselves, because as we also know, there is a big change in the way that media has gone, and that there is a lot of, hey, this is what everybody else is saying, and hey, we only have so much time to catch the Google News wave, and so don't spend so much time reporting on this. Why don't you just say what everybody else is saying instead of going to try to do a whole lot of original reporting on this? And we also know that there's also quite a bit of aggregation these days. There's a whole lot more of news curation than there is news reporting, so much so that I think there is an entire generation of quote-unquote journalists out there who actually don't have any idea about what the difference is between reporting and curation. And we have an entire world of readers who don't know the difference between the two. And so that now we have the way that a lot of media is set up now, we have the readers telling us on the media side what it is that we should be giving them. Because it's like, well, this is the keyword that everybody wants, and this is the lead that everybody wants to see. So Apple Watch or, you know, a new iPhone has no phone jack is the lead that everybody's looking for. So that tends to be the lead that a lot of media sites will feed right back to them, because they know that that's the one that gets the clicks, and that's the one that therefore gets the ads. And once, you know, that becomes the norm, and that becomes where the competition is. That unfortunately becomes how the whole machine goes. And so, while I'm very, very frustrated with that kind of coverage, I also know that I'm not going to put all of the blame on my fellow reporters out there, because I know how the whole machine has gone down over the past 20 years. It's not entirely their fault. And yes, I lament it. I lament it. And I know that those of us on this call, and I know that my colleagues at Dark Reading do our level best to make sure that none of that ever happens here. But it happens. And I cry about it.
Sometimes.
And I
spent
a lot of time on a soapbox, but I couldn't help it.
No, well,
Jessica,
put.
I heard your
well
voice
put.
There.
Yeah, well put.
Now, I was about to say, sometime soon we'll have to have the special Tech Journalism the Way It Used to Be episode of Information Week Live, and we can all talk about that. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wait until another show coming up, because we've just about used up all of our time today. And as I promised at the beginning of the show, I think this was an absolutely wonderful episode. We did get to some significant news. We got to some significant analysis. Who can ask for anything more? Well, actually, there's one more thing I can ask for, and I'm about to do that. Sarah, I know that you have to plan your coverage ahead. So looking ahead to next week, what's on your radar screen, and how can people keep up with you on social media to know when to read you at Dark Reading?
Well, I'm actually going to be covering some kind of Hollywood news, because I'm going to a pre-screening of the new movie Snowden, and will be in Brooklyn this weekend, and there will also be some interviews there with Snowden's lawyer, and I believe Oliver Stone will also be there. So that story is going to be coming up early next week. And you can find me at Sarah Peters on Twitter. There's no H in Sarah.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to your coverage and to the movie. Well, Jessica, what sort of star-studded news do you have coming up in the next week, and how can people find you on social media to keep up with it?
Well, I'll be tweeting news, and you can expect some news coming out of the Teradata event that's coming up next week. I will also I am working on a feature about the use of machine language and algorithms and voice processing to help law enforcement investigate hoax calls and even terrorism. So working on that story, and that should be coming up soon.
Outstanding. And speaking of that Twitter coverage of news, what's that Twitter handle one more time?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's at Jessica Davis, spelled just how it sounds.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much. As for me, I've got a couple of case studies coming up, including one with one of the world's most recognizable corporations, looking at how they deal with an incredibly common problem that's out there. You'll want to come back to Information Week for that. In addition, just today, we released a new podcast. Information Week has a new series of podcasts called Information Week's Expert Voice. I had a chance to get together over the phone with the CIO of Yamaha. That's the Yamaha musical instrument company. And we talked about how they've created their infrastructure to keep up with their very creative customer base and employee base. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at KG4GWA. Well, thanks for spending a half hour with us. If you're doing it live, we appreciate it and hope that you've been taking the time to join in the conversation that's online here at Information Week. If you are listening to this in a streaming or podcast version, we thank you but remind you that every week Information Week Live does indeed happen live at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'd love to have you join us then and be part of that online conversation. Well, for Jessica Davis, Sarah Peters, and everyone here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin. Thanks so much for being with us. See you next week.